Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions like, who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Dr. Stuart Squires. I'm the Associate Director of the Center for Faith and Culture and Associate Professor of Theology at the University of St. Thomas in Houston. The Center for Faith and Culture brings the Catholic voice to the ongoing conversation about the meaning of life and liberty and pursuit of happiness we hold in common as Americans. My guest today is Betsy Duga. She is a computer analyst and a member of the Focolare movement since 1987. First of all, thank you very much for joining me, Betsy.
I'm so glad to be here.
I'd like to talk today about the Focolare movement. So why don't we just start with that basic question. What is the Focolare movement?
Well, in a nutshell, the Focolare movement is a Catholic lay movement that began in the 1940s during World War II. The charism is a charism of unity. So, you know, if you think what, in one word, what is St. Francis's charism? It's poverty. So for us, the charism is unity. And it refers back to the words of the gospel where Jesus says, Father, may they all be one as you are in me and I am in you, so that the world might believe. So really that unity that comes from the life of the Trinity lived here on earth.
So we can see you brought up the Franciscans and that charism of poverty, and we can sort of see in very obvious ways how poverty manifests itself with the Franciscans. How do we see unity sort of concretely and visibly express itself in the Focolare movement?
So living the spirituality, the concept of dialogue is very central into the spirituality and the life of all of us who try to live it. Dialogue, interestingly enough, was broken out into 6 points that we call the art of loving. Mm-hmm. And it was broken out into 6 points to give to children as a cube, the so-called cube of love. Mm-hmm. And they are love one another, love everyone, be the first to love, love your enemy, love always, and make yourself one, like take on the joys and sufferings of the other person. And so by living this way, it allows us to set aside our own self, to listen and hear what the other person is saying, to understand what they're feeling, to bring that, like it's like a pill form of the gospel.
You talk to sort of, it's a lay movement.
Mm-hmm.
How is that similar or different from a religious order, like say the Poor Clares or the Passionists?
Well, the traditional religious movements generally, if I understood right, started with the consecrated people.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the consecrated moved on, and then eventually they got the third orders and the other people. So the movement started really with the people. So the movement has many vocations, and the consecrated members are just a small portion of all the members of the movement. So we have little kids, we have families, we have single, we have bishops, we have also members of other religions and other Christian traditions who embrace the spirituality of the Focolare.
You started to talk about the history of the movement. I'd like to go a little deeper into that. So when was it started? Where was it started? Why was it started? There's certainly plenty of movements over the past 2,000 years in Catholicism. What need was it sort of trying to address? Talk a little bit about the history.
Well, the movement started in Trent, Italy. And if you know anything about the geography of Italy, Trent is really kind of on the border between Austria, Germany, Switzerland, and Italy. And so during World War II, it was overrun several times, you know, different sides of the war passing through their town. And so Chiara Lubich, the founder of the Focolari, was like in her 20s, early 20s. And she and her friends were like, my gosh, everything is being destroyed. The universities are closing. Fiancés are not returning from the war. Houses are being destroyed. They said, is there anything that we can live for that bombs cannot destroy? And, you know, Chiara says, you know, just like God puts a question in our heart to give us the answer, they felt the answer was God, to live for God. And that is how, that's what they could live for that bombs couldn't destroy. And so they began very simply. They would choose a phrase of the gospel and try to live it, you know. So love, give and you shall receive. And so, like, for example, you know, war, there's a lot of poverty, a lot of necessity. And so, like, somebody would knock on the door and like say, we have no food. Can you help us? Mm-hmm. And so like they would say, you know, they'd look at each other. There's one particular experience. All they had was one egg left for five of them. Mm. And so they said, no, but this is Jesus in our neighbor who is asking. We have to give it to him. And so they gave the egg. And then, you know, the hundredfold, Jesus promises the hundredfold in the gospel. And it's true today as it was 2,000 years ago. Somebody brought a bag full of eggs, you know, straight from the country. So these experiences, I could tell you hundreds of them, but anyway, so little by little, and as you can imagine, the lesson of the war that everything passes was so strong that after a few months, there were about 500 people trying to live this way with them. Mm-hmm. And so the first Focolari house began by chance. I mean, just circumstances. It's not like they said, we're going to create a movement. How are we going to do it? No, they said there was a big bombing in May that year, and parents had to leave. So the young women, friends of Chiara, were the only people were still working. And so as their parents fled for the hills because their houses were destroyed or went to stay with relatives, Chiara and her first friends needed a place to stay. And so they said, well, let's live together. Because at that time, it was not known. You know, people didn't leave home and live in apartments. So that's the circumstances brought them to live that way. And as you could say, they read the gospel. You know, who hears you, hears me. Mm-hmm. And they understood. They said, we have to tell the bishop what we're doing. So, but they went back and forth. They said, but we're just living Christianity. What do we need to tell him? And then they
keep
said,
keep the bishop out of it.
No, but then they said, no, we have to tell the bishop. No, because that's what the gospel says. Mm-hmm. And so they went and spoke to Bishop De Ferrari, and he listened to them. And he said, here is the hand of God. Mm-hmm. And so they were just so grateful. And so they continued to keep him updated and work closely with him. So, yeah, so it spread after the war. People returned back to their cities or traveled far. And they began, so unity, you know, and mutual love. Because another aspect was this love your neighbor, no? Jesus says, love the other as yourself. This new commandment was really also key. And so they were really challenged in the sense that there was a lot of persecution. You don't think of that. You know, the movement is where it is today. But because people, the only people speaking of love of neighbor were the Protestants. Mm-hmm. And the only people speaking of unity were the communists. Mm-hmm. And so it was really also a challenge to say, to continue to love, to continue to believe that they were following God. And so the movement spread. In fact, in the early 60s, someone said, so Chiara, you're talking about unity. So does that include people of other Christian traditions? And she said, no, this is just Catholic. Well, a year later, some Protestant Lutheran nuns heard about it, mm-hmm. and they contact her and they say, oh, can you tell us about this? Can you come and give us a retreat? Because they were so excited to hear about this. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, Chiara says, like, the pen doesn't know what the hand is going to write.
Sure.
You know, so she just follow. I mean, the circumstances brought about different things. And so that began our, and so then they told their Anglican friends. And so the movement expanded. I mean, and of course, each person lives the spirituality within their own tradition. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, a Lutheran starts living the spirituality and becomes Catholic. No, each one lives where they are. And, you know, when Chiara talks about the will of God, she gives the image. She says, you know, just like when you see the sun, all the rays coming out from the sun, and if each of us stays in our will of God, in our plan of God, the closer we get to God, the closer we get to each other. And so, so really this sense of participating in God's plan for humanity, not just, but it's big, you know? And then in the 1970s, Chiara received the Templeton Prize for Progress in Religion. Mm-hmm. And there she was in this room for the first time full of people of many different faiths. And she said, I felt the presence of God there. You know, and so this began our friendship, our dialogue, a dialogue of life with people of other religions. So Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims. And so since then, it has expanded. In fact, in countries like Algiers, they most of the members of the Focolare are Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they... They, you know, it's not like, it's not, we're not out to convert. I mean, of course, if God invites, if someone feels God's calling them to, you know, something, you know, we're right there. But it's like to bring that love of God to every person. And then another key concept is, you know, where Jesus says, where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in their midst. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, for me personally, that was such a huge, revelation, you know? Because I understood that, like, for example, if I am at work, right? And there's another person who is trying to live the gospel, who is trying to love, who's trying to be that presence of Jesus. And we have that presence of Jesus among us. It's not me who has to touch the heart of somebody in a difficult situation. It's Jesus who's among us who does that. So I am become an instrument to bring that presence of God to these other people. Mm-hmm. In fact, the official name of the Focolare is the Work of Mary. Mm-hmm. And so we say, just like Mary brought Jesus to the world physically, through our mutual love, we want to bring Jesus back to the world spiritually.
You had mentioned earlier that during the war, they sort of all lived together for out of necessity, and then you talk about how a lot of people sort of accuse them of communism, and so those two things in my mind sort of make the connection between the Catholic worker and Dorothy Day here. Is there a similar sort of, I mean, obviously there wasn't historically any connection between these two movements, but is there a similar sort of spirit between the two of them?
Well, I don't know that much about the Catholic okay. worker. I mean, I saw the movie, but
okay, that's fun.
Yeah.
You said it's technically called the Work of Mary. So, mm-hmm. you know, obviously all Catholics have sort of a devotion to Mary on one level or another. But can you talk about how Mary sort of informs the Focolare movement, the charism?
So we see Mary as the model Christian, the first Christian, the one to imitate, the one who was there with Jesus throughout his life, and in a particular way at his death, where she was there at the foot of the cross, and that suffering of losing her son, losing, you know, really to imitate that in our lives, no? So the, yeah, so many, I'm sorry, in this moment, I'm just blanking out.
It's okay. We can move on. One question I wanted to talk about, you mentioned several times Kira Lubich, the foundress of the movement. Could you talk more about her, talk about her history? Oftentimes these founders are sort of very charismatic individuals. Who was she and why, how is she able to sort of have so many people come to her and fall in love with her ideas and what she wanted to do?
Yes, she was a very charismatic person. Mm-hmm. So just a few words, like she was born Sylvia, and she took on the name Chiara when she became a Third Order Franciscan. And even early on there, she was made mistress of novices of the new Third Order people and asked to give retreats and formation. She was a school teacher. And even during the war, she taught in some small villages around Italy, around, you know, Trent area. She was someone who, and if you read any of her writings, you see someone who God was everything for her. Like she, when they talk about the war, they say, we almost didn't realize the war ended because they were so taken by loving God through loving their neighbor. No? So this sense that if I love you, but I love Jesus in you, but it's you, it's not, you know, if I love you, but that Jesus in you, then I grow in union with God. And so she was someone who had that force, that conviction in everything she said and everything she did. I don't know if, yeah, I mean, even, yeah, sorry.
I'm sure you know over the past 50 years, there's been a sort of decrease in men and women in the Catholic Church entering into religious life. And some people are talking about sort of new forms of spirituality that will pop up to replace those older ways. Would you say that the Focolare movement is one of those? And, if so, how does the Focolare movement address some of the spiritual needs today in the 21st century that maybe those older forms of religious life did not or could not?
You know, that's so interesting because in 97, the Holy Father had the gathering of the new movements, right? And the then Cardinal Ratzinger gave a very famous talk where he said, you know, after Vatican II, we were waiting for a springtime of the church. Mm-hmm. And we saw people leaving the convent, leaving the church, leaving. But we didn't look over here and see how the movements were growing and really filling that the new needs of the church today. So yes, the Focolare movement is, because it's a spirituality where anybody can become a saint. No, it's not like, you know, you don't have to leave everything. You don't have to right where you are. And that's one of the exciting things of it, no? Because to do the will of God, what does it take? You just are where you are. You just listen. You know, and so to love your neighbor, we can all love our neighbor. No matter where we are, no matter who we are, you don't have to be a bishop. You don't have to be religious. And so like we have a monthly phrase of the gospel that really goes out where with a commentary on it that talks about how, you know, a little background on the gospel, but then how do we live it? How do we put it in practice? And it includes an experience of someone trying to put it in practice. And so this goes out, like millions of copies go out. And now online, it goes even further. And it's a way that people, wherever they are, and then we have small gatherings where people come together once a month to share how they're trying to live it. And so it's really like a model of the early Christian communities, you know, where you come together, you share, like, this month, I really had a hard time doing it. I just couldn't get it. And then somebody else will say, this, I tried this way and it worked. And these were the fruits. And then the other one, you know, and so it's really encouraging each other. And it's an opportunity to experience also that presence of Jesus among us, where we're trying to love one another. And, so this way. And then of course there are many vocations within the movement. So there's, the Volunteers of God, where people voluntarily say, commit themselves to living the spirituality in society, to through their work, through their community, through their, you know, with the schools with the kids, to bring the spirituality, the light of the gospel, and transform it from within. No, there are priests who get together and share their experiences trying to live the word of life. There's even bishops who get together and share how they're living it. Mothers, children, we have meetings for children where, and it's amazing to see how they really jump at, they learn so fast what it means to love. I mean, this cube of love that I mentioned earlier is something that has gone into some Catholic schools and really transformed the classrooms. I commuted with someone who was a first grade teacher for about a year, and it was amazing to hear how from the September all the way through May, to hear as the class was transformed, the relationships between the children, but then the children take it home, and so the relationships within the families are transformed. And so and then we have a summer retreat, a moment where families, young people, single people, everybody comes together. It's usually like 3 or 4 days at a university or a camp. And it's a chance to experience what the world would be like if we all lived, love one another as I have loved you. And so, like, there's an adult program, and then there's different programs for the children, but we all come together for meals. I mean, during the day, there are challenges, and we all go out and try to love, try to be the first to love. And, you know, each year has a different theme. And so then I leave recharged, ready to go back to work, to my neighborhood, and to bring this light of the gospel wherever I am.
Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions like, who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas. You've mentioned several times the word love, which certainly is at the heart of the Christian message, but it's also a word that's thrown around a lot in our culture today, but there's a sort of different way of thinking or different definition between the Catholic definition of love and there's sort of the dominant American culture way of thinking about love. So when you talk about love, when Chiara or the Focolare movement talks about love, what does that mean? How is that definition of love different from what we see in our American society today?
So to love is a choice. It's really to to put the other person first. Mm-hmm. And also, love means service. So serving is a way we love. So, I mean, being the first to love, that doesn't mean, it's not a sentimental thing. If you ever hear Chiara talk about it, it's not sentimentalism. It's a love, she says, you have to do with your muscles. Mm-hmm. You have to be there for the person. You have to listen. It's really, as I said, a choice. It's a choice to put yourself aside to be there for the other person.
I'm sure you've heard in the past few years a lot of talk in Catholic circles about the so-called Benedict option. Would you say that the Focolare movement in any way sort of embodies those principles in the Benedict option?
I'm sorry. No, I haven't heard about the Benedictine.
No, it's just, Benedict as in Benedict of Nursia, the founder of the Benedictine order, is the idea that, the Benedictine order emerges as the Roman Empire collapses. And then it's through the monastic movement in those monasteries where Western culture is preserved, right? All the ancient texts are saved in the monasteries while Western culture collapses all around. And so the monasteries are sort of a way of preserving Western culture. And so there's these parallels that are being drawn. Some people want to talk about the collapse of the Roman Empire and the collapse of the American Empire. And the question then becomes, how and where do we see Catholicism doing something similar to what Benedict did at the collapse of the Roman Empire, preserving Western culture in any ways? So there's been a lot of talk in the past few years in Catholic circles about what might that look like? What is this sort of new way, not a monastic way as Benedict had initiated, but how can the church preserve Western culture as it collapses around us? And I wasn't sure if maybe the Focolare movement had a sort of flavor of that, of trying to preserve the Western culture in any ways. No. Okay. Let's talk about specifically the Focolare movement here in Houston. What specific focus do we see here of the Focolare movement in Houston? What are some of the activities or the ways that the Focolare movement has lived in Houston?
So one of the focuses here, but also across the world, is a focus on the youth, really supporting, forming, being with, accompanying the youth who are in touch with us, mostly through our families, but also as they get older, they bring their friends with them. Last October, before the lockdown, we had an amazing weekend with, I don't know, it was like maybe 35, 40 young teenagers out in a camp. And it was a great experience for them. It was a light for their lives at home and at school that they continue. They had another camp, a virtual camp this summer, and they continued that bond, that connection, that life that came from last year continued, and also was a key part of this event we had this summer. So we have the young adults also meet regularly. Now with the lockdown, we meet virtually. And we also, for a period of time, we had, before the lockdown, once a month, we had a hangout here at our house, mm-hmm. where we invited every young person we knew. They came, we had food, we had a topic of discussion, so some input, maybe, just something in the church or in society. Then we broke out into groups and talked about it. Really also trying to bring in the gospel into what we're doing, and then inviting them for next time. So it's really just to give people a place to be, a place to feel comfortable. Oh, we always play a game. They love games, even as young adults. And sure. And so it's really so that they feel at home. And so then we also meet with the adults and the families. We have monthly meetings with some young couples, and we meet with the community at large once in a while. And so that's pretty much where we're at.
Let's talk about you and your interest, your involvement in the Focolare movement. How did you personally get interested in it?
Well, that's so interesting because, I always wanted to live for something big, really big. I grew up in New Orleans, and so in college, I said, if I graduate with honors, that's something big. And so I graduated with honors, and then you say, okay, now what? And so one of my classmates was, he and his family knew the Focolare. So when I got my first job in Houston, he introduced me to some families who were living the spirituality. And Yeah, when I was in college, I was dating this one guy, and I thought, okay, I'm good. You know, this desire to live for something big, to give everything. And I say, okay, I'm going to ask him to marry me, and then I'll live for him and the kids and my career. But you know, it's so interesting because at a certain point, before I could even say anything, I felt something inside. Wait, there's something bigger. And so I moved to Houston, and they invited me to their summer gathering, the Mariopolis, which was in Las Cruces, New Mexico that year, 16-hour bus ride. Mm. And so I was so touched by this. I felt so strongly I needed to find out more that I borrowed the money. And I told the job, I said, look, I can start now and take a week off, or I can start at the end of July, middle July. They say, no, start now. We'll give you the week off. And so I went to this summer gathering, and I was really touched by everything I saw, by the families, just the attitude, the, you know, everything. And so when I left, they said, okay, look, you've heard so much. It was like 5 days. They said, pick one thing and try to live it. And so I picked be the first to love. And so when I went back, at work, I tried to be the first to love. When I went home to my parents, try to be the first to love, which meant to wash those last dishes in the kitchen. Or at work, I mean, there was this one moment where, you know, I was young, right? And as a young person, you think you know everything. And so my boss asked me to do something, and I didn't think I needed to do it. And so I didn't. And so then he came down the hallway and said, and I could tell he was going to ask me about this. And in that moment, I thought, I can love him, and through loving him, love God by doing what he asked, or I can put up an argument, which I also love doing. And so, but in that moment, I chose I chose to do what I needed to do. And so because I had seen him coming down the hall. So when he got to my door, he said, look, Betsy, you need to do this. And I said, okay. He was like blown off his feet. So yeah. So the more I got to know, the more I wanted to know. And I guess one thing is, you know, the communion of goods. This is something that we try to live within the Focolare. To really say, but what I have is not mine. It's given to me to use. And if somebody else needs it more, then it belongs to them. And so I had, you know, on different occasions thought about joining the Peace Corps, saying there's so much that needs to be done in the world. Mm-hmm. But through the communion of goods, this idea that I could share what I had, even without going to who knows where, was so exciting, because I said, I can stay right here where I am and work for United World, work to build a new world. And just a lot of things. The idea of building a new humanity, transforming society through the gospel, that was so exciting. To build a united world, yeah, I would say those are some of the things.
How would you say that the Focolare movement has shaped your spiritual life?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When I was in college, maybe, or high school, I read this one book, and it said, yeah, if you do meditation every day for 5 years, you might experience the presence of God. And I said, no, this is not for me. I'll never manage. And so, you know, with this spirituality, as soon as you love, I mean, love is God, love, you know, that presence of God is in your heart, no? And you experience it. And so for me, it's like, this is something I can do. And of course, when I stop loving, it's not there. And so I start over again. In fact, Chiara says the most important, I mean, in Italian, it's one word, the verb in the Italian language is to start over again, to start over again. And so this freedom to say, I am so imperfect, I make so many mistakes, but I can start over again all the time. To love God, to love my neighbor, to be in the present moment, to live the will of God, is just so, it's so encouraging, and it's helped me so much throughout my life.
Would you say that it's shaped your professional life at all? I'd mentioned earlier you're in the computer business, the computer analyst. Is there some way that you've been able to bring together this spiritual life as dictated by or influenced by the Focolare movement and what you do with computers?
Well, in Chicago, I worked at a company for about 16 years. And there, you know, the idea of creating the family, creating community among coworkers, across teams, within teams, has been something that the spirituality has helped me a lot with. There was a lunchtime seminar that I oversaw for about 5 years, which was a great opportunity to share information, but also to get to know people across the organization. In fact, there is one, you could say, a miracle I did. On one team, I changed positions at a certain point and was working side by side a gentleman who we had been at odds. We had different ideas about each other, and he was really struggling with his job, with the whole atmosphere and everything like that, and he could have been considered a difficult person. And so I went and I said, I'm going to love this person no matter what. And, you know, but really love him. And so 6 months after I was in that position, somebody said, Betsy, what did you do? Because he was transformed. Mm. He was another person. He was almost happy to be at work.
Almost.
And he was, you know, just so much more relaxed. Mm-hmm. Less combative. Mm-hmm. So it's a small, it's a small thing,
sure.
But anyway,
it's
every
huge
drop,
in his life.
Yeah.
Right? How did you love him to transform him?
Well, so the things on the cube, you know, it's really like recognizing the things he suffered with, mm-hmm. to suffer with him,
sure.
to say, yes, this process is so hard. And then to work with baby steps to transform it, to make it easier, and then also to listen to him when he was upset about something or when he was, you know, agitated about something that was going on, or, you know, and to be interested in him, mm-hmm. Find out what else he's doing in life. You know, and the thing is, it's not that it didn't start then. It started, you know, the years before when I was at odds with him, that I continued to try to reach out to him. I mean, he had an accident at a certain point and was out for like 3 months. So to get people to sign a card, to send it to him, to show that we miss him and just show a certain amount of appreciation. So there's so many tiny ways,
sure.
and you can say, oh, a card, I mean, you know, it seems so simple, but it makes a difference in people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Last question. I always like to end on a note of hope. Mm-hmm. So we are a people of hope, specifically hope in the resurrection. When you think about the future of the Focolare movement and what it can do transforming society, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is this idea that there are people spread out across the country and across the world who believe in something greater and are willing to work towards it. And so I find it hopeful that knowing that people are spread out in different jobs in different parts of society, doing their best to make a difference, that... And then the thing is that hope comes also knowing that if we keep Jesus in the midst, that it's Jesus who's making the difference through us.
I think that's the perfect way to end our conversations. Betsy, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Are you looking for answers to life's biggest questions like, who are we? What does it mean to be a human person? What does it mean to be a Catholic in America today? How can I be a prophetic voice in our culture? The Center for Faith and Culture at the University of St. Thomas in Houston now offers its MA in Faith and Culture online. This program transforms students by immersing you in the historical, cultural, and theological patrimony of the Catholic tradition, so that you'll go out into the dominant American culture and leaven it with the good news. Students can audit courses, get an 18-hour certificate, or go for the entire MA program. For more information, Google Center for Faith and Culture, the University of St. Thomas.